Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to get you up to speed quickly on fascinating topics. Today, we're digging into a really crucial part of history, the role poverty played in the Waldensian movement.
Yeah, absolutely. And for this, we're leaning heavily on Dr. Kevin E. Frederick's work, specifically his lecture, A Radical Distinction, The Role of Poverty. He really unpacks how central this idea was.
He does, and he connects it way back, actually, to the very start of Christianity. You know, the book of Acts.
Oh, yeah, Acts chapter 4, that description of the early believers.
Right, verses 32 to 77. It paints this picture of, like, communal living, sharing everything, no one needy.
And the Waldensians, they didn't just see that as ancient history, did they? They saw it as, well, the ideal. A blueprint.
Exactly. Even though the wider church kind of drifted away from that intense sharing over the centuries, that idea rejecting excessive wealth, it just kept bubbling under the surface.
Right. It becomes this powerful undercurrent. Okay. So let's jump forward. A long way forward, like 1,000 years to the 11th century. Dr. Frederick describes a church facing some pretty big problems internally.
Yeah, the authority of church leaders was really being questioned. There was a lot of mistrust.
And this ties into something bigger happening then, right? The Gregorian Reform.
Definitely. Pope Gregory VII, this is around 1073 to 1085, he was trying to, well, clean house, tackle some really deep-rooted issues in the church structure.
Okay, cleaning house. Let's unpack that. Dr. Frederick mentions two key things. Lay investiture and simony. What exactly were those?
Okay, so lay investiture, imagine a king or emperor appointing a bishop.
Ah, okay, so secular rulers picking church officials.
Exactly, often for political reasons, not, you know, spiritual ones.
Yeah.
And simony was even more blatant. It was literally buying and selling church positions.
Wow, so you could just buy your way into being a bishop.
Pretty much. You can see how that leads to leaders who might be more interested in, well, money and power than spiritual guidance. Yeah, no kidding. That would definitely erode trust. And the Gregorian Reform trying to fix this, it had some unintended consequences, didn't it?
It really did. Gregory banned these practices, obviously.
Yeah.
But he also encouraged regular churchgoers, the laity, to criticize clergy living immoral lives.
Okay.
Now, here's the twist. That encouragement kind of accidentally fueled this belief called Donatism.
Donatism.
Yeah, the idea that if a priest was corrupt, then the sacraments they performed, like communion, weren't valid.
Oh, wow. So trying to purify the church actually led to more division.
In a way, yes. It shows how reforms, even good ones, can kind of backfire when they challenge established power. It's fascinating.
That really is. So that unstable 11th century sort of paves the way for the 12th. And that's when Dr. Frederick says you start seeing scholars like Peter Abelard really speak out against the church's wealth.
Mm-hmm. They pointed out the huge contrast, didn't they? The clergy living in luxury while most people were, well, poor.
Yeah. They were basically asking, is this what Jesus taught? That's a powerful question.
A question that clearly struck a chord with a lot of people.
Definitely. And it's into this climate that poor Leon, later known as Waldo, emerges. This is early 12th century. Dr. Frederick points out an interesting encounter his group had with the poor of Lombardy.
Yes, that's a key distinction. Waldo's group, the poor of Leon, were initially all about preaching, traveling around, living simply, relying on charity.
Okay.
But the poor of Lombardy, they focused more on, like, communal living, actually working together, sharing resources, and educating people in scripture, really grounding it in Acts, but also James, Paul to Timothy.
So two groups, both into poverty, but different approaches. Labor was the big sticking point, you said.
Yeah, initially. The Lombard group believed everyone should have a trade, contribute work to the community. They saw it as practical and, you know, biblical.
Right, reflecting that early church model.
Exactly. Waldo's group was more focused on just preaching and trusting God to provide through others.
But they eventually joined up around 1205.
They did affiliate, yeah. But that difference over labor persisted. And as Dr. Frederick notes, having trades actually became super important later during the Inquisition.
How so?
Well, it made the Waldensians more self-sufficient. Harder for the authorities to just cut off their support and root them out. A small difference with big consequences down the line.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, another figure Dr. Frederick brings in is Arnold of Brescia. You mentioned he was a student of Abelard.
That's right. So he had that intellectual critique of church wealth. But Arnold, he was more about action.
taking the ideas and putting them into practice.
Exactly. He really emphasized living faith through actions, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, you know, Matthew 25 stuff. And again, that communal living from Acts.
And like Waldo, he used the common language, not Latin.
Yes, the vernacular. That was huge. Yeah. Making scripture accessible to everyone, bypassing the church's gatekeeping.
Which, predictably, the church saw as a threat.
Oh, absolutely. A major threat.
And the response. Dr. Frederick says Arnold was condemned as a heretic and executed quite early, 1155.
Yeah, even before Waldo really got going. But his ideas didn't die with him. Those communities he inspired in Lombardy, they continued and later influenced Waldo.
It really says something, doesn't it? That these calls for like a simpler, more authentic Christianity were met with such violence.
It really underscores how threatened the established power felt by these movements.
And that pattern continued with Waldo himself. 1184, Dr. Frederick says he's declared schismatic, banished from Lyon.
Mm-hmm. And his big crime, refusing to stop their missionary poverty preaching without official say-so.
Right. The church seemed okay with individual piety, maybe, but an organized movement challenging their authority on preaching, that was different.
That was the line. But getting banished didn't stop them, did it?
Not at all. They just went out in pairs and kept preaching, spreading the message even further.
But it wasn't just raw enthusiasm driving them. Dr. Frederick highlights Durand of Huesca. He was a Catholic scholar who joined them.
Yeah, bringing some serious intellectual weight, theological grounding.
Right. And interestingly, Durand wrote this work, the Liber Antiheresis, aimed at refuting the Cathars.
Another group the church had issues with.
A very different group, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Dualistic God denied Jesus' physical suffering. Stuff like that. So Durand was defending core Christian beliefs.
And his work was respected even within parts of the Catholic Church.
Apparently so. It gave the Waldensians some credibility. But that core issue remained.
Unauthorized preaching in the vernacular.
That was the sticking point. Even after Waldo died around 1206, 1207, Durand tried hard to reconcile the movement with Rome.
But it failed. Because of the preaching issue?
Seems so. The church wouldn't budge on who controlled the message.
So what happened to Durand?
Well, he and some others eventually did reconcile in 1208. They formed a new group, the Poor Catholics, with the Pope's approval.
Huh. So the church kind of co-opted the poverty idea, but kept control of the preaching.
Basically, yeah. An attempt to harness that appeal for simplicity, but within official structures.
Which leads us then to Francis of Assisi. Dr. Frederick connects the dots between the Waldensians, the Poor Catholics, and the rise of the Franciscans around 1212.
Mm-hmm. Now, Francis obviously had his own profound spiritual experiences, his own reading of scripture driving him, but the ground was definitely fertile, wasn't it?
Yeah, the ideas were already out there. Waldo's followers were active, especially in Italy, Tuscany. The core Catholics existed. It created an environment where Francis's message of poverty really resonated.
And the church, maybe seeing the writing on the wall, chose to embrace this movement, but within an official order.
Right. But Dr. Frederick stresses a key difference. The Franciscans embraced poverty, yes, but that lay-led, unauthorized preaching focus of the poor of Lyon. The church didn't fully adopt that.
No. The Franciscans, while radical in their poverty, still operated firmly under church authority.
Okay, so let's talk about the overall impact of the Waldenses, both the Lyon and Lombard groups. Dr. Frederick says they were incredibly effective because their theology was mostly mainstream Catholic.
Exactly. Combine that Orthodox theology with preaching in the common language. It was powerful. People understood them.
So powerful that some inquisitor in the 1260s called them the most dangerous heretics, even though they weren't teaching wildly different doctrine.
Yeah. It highlights how threatening their approach was, that integration of simple living and direct communication.
Mm-hmm.
It challenged a clergy that often seemed disconnected.
And the church's response tells its own story, right? Creating the Dominicans to preach.
Mm-hmm. The order of preachers, specifically using the vernacular.
And developing the Franciscans, focused on poverty.
Right. But as Dr. Frederick points out, the Waldensians integrated both preaching and poverty in their leadership right from the start.
Whereas the Catholic orders initially kept them somewhat separate, and most regular priests weren't bound by those vows anyway.
Precisely. It allowed the main church structure, with its wealth and power, to remain largely intact. Dr. Frederick argues that this full integration of message and lifestyle wouldn't really resurface widely until, well, Luther and the Reformation.
Centuries later. Wow. It's a long arc. And he also mentions a shift in art reflecting this.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Move away from Christ, Pantocrator, you know, the majestic ruling Christ, all gold and glory,
right,
towards images focusing more on Jesus's humanity and suffering, the crucifix becomes much more central.
And that was influenced by the Franciscans and this whole emphasis on poverty and humility.
Significantly, yes.
Yeah.
It shows how these theological currents really shaped culture and how people visualize their faith.
It really does. So wrapping up, it's clear people like Waldo, Arnold, Francis,
mm-hmm.
they really shook things up, challenged the status quo, pushed the church back towards perhaps some core principles.
Absolutely. And this deep dive really highlights that enduring tension, doesn't it, between institutional wealth and power and the spiritual ideals of simplicity and service. The Waldensians, looking back to Acts, they posed a fundamental question.
Yeah, they looked at that early church and asked, did we lose something along the way? And their persistence, even facing persecution, clearly had ripples, influencing Catholic orders, setting the stage perhaps for even bigger changes later, like the Reformation.
It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? How do movements today, maybe emphasizing a return to first principles, challenge our own established institutions, religious, political, economic?
That's a good question. And what kind of unexpected long-term effects might those challenges have? Maybe thinking about that tension between wealth and ideals in our own time gives us something to chew on.